Hey y'all, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the world of fitness and nutrition. Today, we're going to do a lot of myth busting and we're going to tackle the topic of disordered eating. I'm very excited about this episode. I hope there's a lot of takeaways and let's jump right in. So before I dive into today's topic, I do want to just do a little bit of patting myself on the back. I did just recently complete my master's in nutrition from Texas Women's University. So I'm very, very excited, guys. It's been a really long journey of schooling from my bachelor's degree to my dietetic internship to my master's degree. So we are done with my master's and I do have a lot of things on the horizons for 2019 with both new education as well as doing seminars, and I am writing a book. So I'm very excited about that. I still got to balance everything in regards to balancing my full-time client work as well as writing, as well as the seminars and everything that I try and do. But let's be real, if I can get through my dietetic internship and my master's and being an online full-time coach, if I could do that, I can do anything. Why? Not just because it's because of my strength, but because my amazing God gives me that strength. So I'm super stoked about 2019. I hope whatever that you have planned, you are ready to tackle and you are excited about it because, guys, 2019 is gonna be epic, okay? So last reminder, if you like this podcast, please leave a review, rate it. This is how I reach more people and I help them change their lives. So please leave a review, let me know how you like it. And as always, you can always email me or DM me topics that you want me to cover. My email is fitandfaith@gmail.com and you can DM me on my Instagram, which is @faithandfit. Okay, let's dive in. Hey y'all, welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. Today I have an amazing guest and I'm very stoked about our conversation. His name is Dr. Joshua Woolrich and he's actually from the UK, so I'm so stoked that we were able to find a time to talk. But thank you so much, Josh, for coming on my podcast. I'm so excited about our conversation, but I would love for you to tell my listeners a little bit about who you are, your background, and what got you essentially so passionate about nutrition.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Well done on pronouncing my name correctly.
Yay!
That last name was impressive. It is Woolrich. So it's Dr. Woolrich. Nice to meet you all. I am from the UK. I'm based pretty much near London. And a bit about my journey. I started Instagram probably about 3 years ago. I started it like most people did, trying to lose weight. I thought I needed to lose weight, so I started on a journey posting all of my food on Instagram because I felt like that was what you're meant to do, right? That's the stereotypical way of doing it. And in my head at the time, my mindset was, I need people to keep me on track and I need people to keep me accountable. So I thought if I post everything I ate, including what I thought of as the bad stuff, then that would help. People could tell me off, and it would keep me on the right path. We can get into why I think that's problematic a bit later. But yes. That was how I saw it back then. So I started posting pictures of food. I did actually end up losing weight, but I followed some fad diets along the way without realizing that they were necessarily fad diets. But as I kind of went through my journey, I started to kind of get really interested in nutrition and learning why what I was doing was working or why what I was doing wasn't working in the way I thought it should. And just more and more, I started realizing that there is a lot of rubbish, not just on the internet, but in magazines, on TV, in movies. Just there's a lot of rubbish out there, what I now term as Nutribollocks, around nutrition and around food, and just stuff that isn't particularly evidence-based that we believe. I don't really know how some of this stuff comes about, but that we believe without questioning it. So my food is very much, sorry, not my food, my page is very much turned from what I originally started it as, which is why it's called Unfattening, because I started it trying to lose weight, into now promoting people having a healthier relationship with food and identifying behaviors that cause disordered eating, not necessarily eating disorders, but disordered eating, which is partway there, but I think stuff that we really don't really pay much attention to, and I think we should.
Yeah, I'm in 100% full agreement. And essentially, that is why I wanted you on this podcast. You are an excellent source for a nutritional information, evidence-based nutritional information, debunking myths, and promoting healthy eating. Because what I see a lot these days, and I'm sure you see a bunch of it, is social media demonizing certain foods, certain diets, certain ways of eating, and making people not only develop disordered habits, but really making people feel bad for their choices. And
oh, definitely.
Making guilt, it like a moral, ethical decision. And that is not the way to go. That's not the way nutrition works. So I'm just very excited that you help promote healthy eating habits and debunk all the crazy myths, because they never stop. Like every other day I'm like, oh look, there's a new myth. Like there's a new thing. Like I never heard that celery juice was a thing until a couple days ago. And I was like, what is this thing with celery juice?
Seriously. Don't even get me started on the medical medium. He is a nightmare.
Oh my God. Thank you for mentioning that. I had a client email me the other day. She was like, what do you think of the medical medium? I was like, quackery.
Charlatan. Yes. is the only word. I mean, he gets his medical advice from spirits, a medium that he contacts. That's literally, I'm not making that up. That's literally what he claims to do. That's why he's called the medical medium. But because of that, I feel like he then doesn't really care about needing any sort of scientific evidence for the claims that he makes. So he just makes the most random claims that I literally think he's just pulling out of thin air, which he may well do. But stuff like what? Celery heals your liver. Celery detoxes your liver. Cranberries detox your liver. There's no evidence to any of this stuff. And you know what's the worst? It's that anybody who even politely asks a question on his page gets blocked immediately. I don't know if you're blocked yet.
I have not even gone on his page yet, but I bet you if I go on there and just make any comment, I'll be automatically blocked.
Literally, even if you just comment something going, what is the evidence for this? You will literally be blocked in about 2 minutes, which is very interesting that he keeps his page completely clean of anyone that even, no, they don't even have to disagree with him, but just even people that are questioning the science behind the stuff that he's claiming gets blocked immediately. And whenever anyone's doing that, you've got to be incredibly skeptical as to what's going on. I have people that disagree with me on my page all the time. And I think you and I even had a little disagreement the other day about, I can't remember exactly what it was, some form of, what was it, collagen or something?
Yes.
But you know, you haven't blocked me. I haven't blocked you. We had a conversation about it and it was interesting. But that's how science works. If we're dogmatic and we think we know everything and we're not even open for conversation, we don't have to agree, but at least be open to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing too, is the fact that science changes. And if you have a closed mind, you are not evidence-based. You have to have an open mind and be open to new ideas, new thoughts, new clinical trials. You have to be able to look at incoming research and prior research. And I that is a whole nother problem as well in regards to what I see in, and I don't mean to like bundle them up all together, but a lot of cardiac researchers and cardiac surgeons and MDs, they're all looking at this past research on saturated fats and polyunsaturated fats, and a lot of them, they don't look at the new literature and they're not open to looking at the new literature. So it can be, it's kind of a problem these days.
I think that goes two ways, right? I think there's people that will completely ignore the current literature dogmatically, but then again, there will be people and there are people that will dogmatically accept the new literature as right without there being enough of it. I think it's very interesting you brought up the cardiac science and the cardiologist, because I mean, I think it's something that we see time and time again, specifically around cholesterol, right? But the problem I have with this is that people then start doubting science. People start saying, oh, well, you know, scientists said this then, and now they're saying this now, we can't trust science. And you know what, that's not how science works. The job of science and the job of the scientific method is to come to conclusions and then test those conclusions. And so when we started kind of blaming cholesterol and saturated fat back in, what was it, the 1920s, and we started looking at all of these scientific studies and models looking around atherosclerosis and butter. And so we saw that people that ate more butter had more atherosclerosis, and butter is high in saturated fat and cholesterol. And so at the time, the hypothesis was saturated fat and cholesterol cause atherosclerosis and therefore cause heart disease. And that was a relatively sensible hypothesis to make from it. Obviously, there were some people that ran with it and were incredibly dogmatic with it. But we then started looking at, okay, so is it both? Is it one? Is it, you know, and science has moved on from then, but people are still stuck back where we started. And people are still stuck looking at the old studies and going, no, we can't look at anything new. This is what we have to look at. And it leads to, well, Netflix programs such as What the Health saying that saying that eggs are as bad as smoking for your cholesterol, for your atherosclerotic levels. It's just horrific. But I think we're getting there slowly. I hope
so too. And a whole nother problem is in regards to, well, both correlation versus causation. Mm. So people don't understand that. And then epidemiological studies. So there are so many, there's bias, there's things that we don't take into account that really play a role into the results. And we really have to be careful in how we extract data and how we interpret the results of observational studies.
Mm, of course. These kind of studies are really important, and it's really important to read them. But what's also just as important is not to make wild claims from them, mm-hmm. and then publish in, you know, on newspaper websites with large reaches that then mean that all of this kind of misinformation and misinterpretation gets spread to such an extent that people then don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah. And another thing to keep in mind for my listeners is a lot of times there'll be a research article that comes out, and there'll be a conclusion, but what the journalist's goal is to attract as many people as they can to their article, their website, whatever they're doing. And what they will do is they can twist the words a little bit. They can twist the data but they can, you know, make it seem a lot bigger or badder than it really is. And that's what they do every single time. They will make any claim that they can. And I've even seen it in regards to that people, journalists, you know, getting quotes from dietitians, from researchers. They will get a quote from them, and they can use just half of the quote, and they leave out the rest of the quote because they can. Sure. And it's just something that people need to be aware of. If you are going to read an article, a newspaper, or whatever regarding any new study, actually try and read the study yourself.
Mm. A perfect example of that was what is it? It's Wednesday today. So last week, there were a few different headlines that came out basically saying that this Harvard study showed intermittent fasting can help you live longer. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole title of the study. It was just Harvard study, which sounds great, right? Because everything from Harvard is great. So therefore, that's a lot of kudos already. And it shows that intermittent fasting, which is a hot topic at the moment, can help you live longer. So of course people are going to click on that. That's a proper clickbait title, that is. But if you look at the study, it was a study done in worms. And you're going, I mean, that's great. That's interesting. So if you have pet worms and you want them to live longer, then maybe you should intermittently fast them. But we can't write newspaper article headlines that say that it will help us live longer when the study hasn't got anything to do with humans at all. And it's just a very interesting observation about mitochondria and intermittent fasting. And you're going, come on, people. People aren't going to read the studies. And so I agree with you. It's if you can, it's quite important just to click through it. And even just the abstract where you read and it says, you know, studied on worms, you go, oh, okay. All right, interesting, but maybe not maybe not as dogmatic as it originally appears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Now, what are your thoughts on intermittent fasting? I'm definitely a fan. I do it myself, but I have looked at the literature and, you know, it's not been shown to be beneficial in regards to body composition and weight loss. No difference in regards to a normal caloric diet, same calories, but I do see improvements for inflammation, neurodegenerative diseases, autophagy. So what are your thoughts based on the literature?
I think they're probably quite similar to yours as well. I think whenever I come at these kind of things, especially because I know who my audience is on Instagram, I always come at them from a place of, let's look at this from a weight loss perspective first, because I know that that's why people are asking me. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, then let's look at this in general. So I agree with what you said. From a weight loss perspective, there aren't any real studies that have shown it to be superior to a normal calorie deficit when it comes to intermittent fasting. Some people might find it more appropriate for them. They might find it easier. But again, I always like to ask people a few questions. I always like to ask, one, is it sustainable for you? So can you see yourself doing this long term? Because the conversation around weight and health is a much more complex question. But if we're assuming that for a particular person, losing weight is going to be helpful for them, then we need this to be sustainable and long term, because there are so many negatives to yo-yoing in regards to weight. And so if we're just doing this as essentially a temporary fad diet that only lasts for 2-3 months and then you stop doing it, then what is the point? You're literally doing that to what, feel better about yourself on the beach because you think that's what society tells you should look like? That's not, there's no good reason to be doing that. It's a lot of stress and a lot of effort for nothing, essentially. So it needs to be sustainable. Is it sustainable? It might be for some people. The second thing is it going to improve your relationship with food? And for some people, I would argue that intermittent fasting is another rule that they're adding on to their day. So they may find that if they have decided that they want to follow this, if they get up in the morning and they are particularly hungry, but they've already made a rule for themselves that they're not going to be eating until, let's say, 2 p.m., because that's what their intermittent fasting window is going to be, then you may find that that ends up being quite detrimental to their mental health. It might be quite detrimental from a stress point of view. And so it's really important to consider where your relationship is. Where is your relationship at with food? Is it at a point where, yeah, you could try intermittently fasting for a secondary health benefit without it having any detrimental effect on your relationship and on your mental health? And then so if you're in a place where your relationship with food is pretty good, then if your question is then, does it have any kind of long-term health benefits? I honestly think it's very interesting. The research that's coming out after I've caveated all of this with make sure you're careful, I would say that, yeah, the interest in the research that's coming out is really interesting around stuff like gut health. The gut microbiome, there are some studies coming out in regards to intermittent fasting from those side of things. What you were saying about the anti-inflammatory and the neurodegenerative stuff is really interesting. So I'm quite excited to see where some of that stuff goes. But the only concern I have is that we have a few studies that show that there might be a benefit. And it is at the moment, it is a might be, because we don't have enough studies yet to be causative about it at present. But as soon as we get a few studies, people that are very adamant that intermittent fasting is the only lifestyle choice that should be made then start using some of these things to back up their dogmatic claims. And it frustrates me, some of that kind of stuff. I just wish people were a bit more balanced in regards to their advice and their approach.
Oh, I full-heartedly agree. A lot of people will see something with a benefit and they jump on a bandwagon and it's the end-all, be-all, the only way to do it. And that's just not the case, specifically for things that are, you know, certain ingredients, things that, like, people will just claim. And I firmly believe in the power of turmeric being anti-inflammatory, but then they're just like pushing things like turmeric for everything and anything, and it will cure all your problems. And I'm just like, we really need to take a step back, and look at the whole entire picture, because that is what matters. That is what matters in regards to any diet, any lifestyle. It's a combination of everything. So even with intermittent fasting and longevity, if you're just intermittent fasting and you're eating like crap, that doesn't weigh out the benefit of the intermittent fasting. Like, just because you fast for 16 hours and you go eat a pizza does not mean you're going to live longer. Just
hang on, wait. That was my plan. What you're ruining this for me. You know that, right?
Oh, I didn't know if you were using, you know, like mozzarella versus cheddar cheese, you know.
No, it's fine. It's turmeric mozzarella. It's all right. Oh,
yes. Okay. Then it might be beneficial.
Yeah. It is an overall approach, right? And I agree with you. I think there are definitely some foods that are going to be quite beneficial to our health that we should probably include more of. I mean, for example, you were saying about turmeric or turmeric or however you want to pronounce it. In regards to oily fish, for example, if you're not vegan, if you do eat fish, then we know that oily fish can be really beneficial for us. Now, if we already eat a fair bit of oily fish, if we suddenly start following advice that oily fish is great for our brain health, well, it might be, but also we may already be getting enough. Mm-hmm. So some of these dogmatic claims of, you know, we need to be eating this for this particular micronutrient that's in it, it's going to make us healthier. Well, have a look. Are you actually already getting enough of that micronutrient from the rest of your diet? Because if you are, you know, feel free to include it in your diet if you want to, but you're not necessarily going to be seeing all these wonderful benefits that you're told you're going to, because everyone is different. Everyone has a different diet to everybody else. Nobody eats in exactly the same way. And so we can't be giving hard and fast rules that are going to fit every single person. Too many people are trying to do that because it doesn't really sell if you can't make it fit everyone.
Oh, and that's the problem, is a lot of people are trying to sell things.
Mm.
Sell their programs, sell their coaching, sell their book, their disordered eating habits book.
it is concerning. I think obviously people need to make people want to make a career out of what they're passionate about, right? And so if they start becoming passionate about, let's stick with intermittent fasting because you know, we've just started talking about it. But if people are passionate about intermittent fasting, that's great. But if people are going to give a very balanced view and say intermittent fasting might be good for you, or this or that, they're not going to sell their intermittent fasting book. Like, if they've written a book about intermittent fasting and how it's the best thing and it's the only lifestyle choice and it's going to cure this disease and that disease and it's going to make you live longer and it's going to do this and that, if they caveat these things in the way that from a scientific perspective they should, it's not going to sell. And so I often have people asking me or sending me things and going, what do you think of this? And I kind of send a message back and going, what is the link in their bio? And they go on back and they go, oh yeah, no, it's a link to selling a plan that is solely based on this information I'm asking you about. And I go, okay, so what do you think then? I mean, it doesn't always mean that they're talking rubbish if they're selling something related to what they're preaching, but it's often a very, very important thing to be looking at.
Mm-hmm. And to be looking at if they're claiming something crazy to be happening or some awesome change that's going to happen, like you're going to lose 15 pounds in like a week. No, run, please.
I mean, if it worked, do you really think they would be the only person talking about it?
Exactly. Like,
you know, people are searching for anything and everything to fix this perspective of being overweight is makes you less of a person, and that's honestly why I think people are searching for this stuff. And do you really think that if this worked as well as people say that it does, that they're going to be the only ones that know about it? It's just not a thing. I mean, people are spending so much money on this stuff. If any of these actually worked as well as they said they did, we would know about it. We really would.
Yeah. Now let's discuss the problem in regards to what we see on the internet, social media, magazines, and that is the problem of these food rules and these, you know, healthy versus unhealthy choices causing disordered eating habits. And I know that you are a firm believer in this, as well as I am, in promoting a healthy lifestyle and remembering that health is not just what you eat and what you do, it's how you think. So I would love your thoughts on how we can be the change in creating sustainable healthy eating patterns.
Well, I think number one is we need to call some of it out as politely as possible. I think when we see something that is problematic or something that could be detrimental, we need to mention it. We need to say, is that actually true? And I think going back to basics, we need to be looking at our relationship with food. How do you feel around food? Like how do you feel when you see something that society tells you is inherently unhealthy? So someone offers you, let's say, because a donut is a great example. We always go back to donuts, but I think that's just because they've been vilified for so long.
If someone offers, get it?
Oh, I like it. Only if it's a holy donut. Otherwise, you know, no. But if someone offers you a donut, how do you honestly? If you're honest with yourself, how do you feel about it? And I'll be honest. I think it varies as to where I'm at on that day. It varies as to where I'm at that week. I'm still working on my relationship with food, and I definitely do not claim to be perfect with it, but I think we need to start identifying it. We need to start thinking. When somebody offers you a donut, is your instinctive reaction, no, I can't have that, it's incredibly bad for me? Is your instinctive reaction, oh, but I know I need to lose weight and that is bad for me, so I can't have one? You know, mm-hmm. what do you think as soon as you go, oh yeah, that donut looks nice, oh no, I can't. Why can't you? What is the reason mm-hmm. behind that? Because we all know that certain foods have more nutritious value for us than others, but that doesn't mean that we should be avoiding any types of foods. And people ask, well, why? Why can't we avoid those foods? But the problem is that when we're avoiding, we're restricting. And when we're restricting, that leads to a whole host of other things, most of which is binging. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of questions about, well, how can I kind of break this binge cycle? Like, why can I not stop eating this certain food? And my main question to them is, well, do you ever actually allow yourself to eat it? Or do you only ever eat it at the times when you then feel like you've binged? And the majority of the time, that's the most important question. They go, oh yeah. Like, I don't actually allow myself to eat a donut ever. But when I'm feeling low, when I'm feeling, you know, when my emotions are high, that's when I then binge eat donuts. And I go, well, if you allowed yourself to eat donuts, do you not think that you wouldn't necessarily go to that particular food for comfort? Like, mm-hmm. it might, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to magically fix everything, and it is a process and it is hard.
Oh, yeah.
But it does, it is important. And if we, when we stop cutting things out of our diet because we believe that they're inherently bad for us, whenever we stop having something, we want it more. What happens when you tell a kid they can't have something? That's the only thing on their mind.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I know we're not kids anymore, but it still works the same way.
I'm always a kid. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, physically at least, we're not children anymore. But
maybe mentally,
I agree with you. But yeah, we do. We have exactly the same response, right? We tell ourselves that we can't have something. And it means that when we're in a position of where we feel like a failure, or where we're feeling low, or where we're feeling that we don't have worth, we then go to that place of, well, what do we want? And we want the stuff that we've never been allowed. Mm-hmm. And if we're not allowed donuts, we're going to end up binging donuts. So give yourself that. And as a very kind of common thing that I say on my page, which I have stolen completely from the Intuitive Eating handbook, which is giving yourself unconditional permission to eat all foods. And I think it's so important. I think I would just like to clarify that people will often ask, well, what do you mean unconditional? Because if I eat 10 donuts, surely that's bad for me. And I'm going, well, if you eat 10 donuts every single day, then maybe, okay? Mm. But 10, if you think rationally, if you eat 10 donuts, how are you actually going to feel physically?
Awful.
I don't know about you. Yeah, I'm not going to feel particularly great physically. Like, forget mentally. Physically, that's a lot of sugar in one go. you know, not that, and again, perhaps a different conversation, not that sugar is inherently healthy, but too much of anything is unhealthy for you.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it in one go. You're going to feel full. You're going to feel quite like just lethargic. It's not going to be great. And so if you actually have permission to choose what you eat and how much of it you eat, do you really think you're going to choose to eat donuts? Do you really think you're going to choose to eat 10 donuts every single day? I don't think so, personally. But you will if you keep trying to tell yourself you're not allowed them. Mm-hmm. Because then the psychological aspect overwhelms the physical aspect. So if you give yourself unconditional permission to eat as many donuts as you want, even if that means you end up eating 10 the first day because you go all out and you get all excited, that's fine. That's not a failure. Move on from that. Go on to the next day. And you know what? Eventually, I can guarantee you, you're not going to be eating 10 donuts in one go, but that's because you're going to have learned to listen to how you feel about certain foods rather than what you've been told about certain foods and how you feel mentally. It's then you're going to recognize how you feel physically a lot better, and you're going to end up picking more of the nutritious food over the less nutritious food, not because the less nutritious food has the power to make you feel guilty, but just because your body works better on the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to combine both in a healthy relationship way rather than because of guilt playing that role. Guilt playing your stepmother looking over your shoulder and going, nope, you can't have that, it's bad for you. It's not good. It's not healthy for you. That's what health is. Health is a combination, right? That was your question. Health is a combination of physical and mental. It's if you're eating all the right stuff in quotes and your physical side is great, but mentally you're all over the place because all of those choices are being based on guilt and based on mm-hmm. on shame around food. I wouldn't call that healthy.
No, I wouldn't either. And the problem is, you know, with demonizing and restricting certain foods is, like you said, it becomes that vicious cycle. And that cycle is it's feast versus famine. And people tend to think, you know, they see that plate of, let's stick with the donuts. They see that plate of donuts and they think, if they've been restricting for a long time, they're like, oh my God, my body's in famine. I don't allow myself to have this. And then it just becomes eat them all because I can never have them again. And we really, people need to make sure that they really teach their bodies. And it's not easy, especially if you come from a past of restriction. It's not easy to teach yourself and your mind to say, hey, that donut's always going to be there and I can have a little bit and walk away. Because at first your body's just going to be like, give it all to me. It doesn't understand yet that it's always going to be there. But it's those baby steps and teaching your body that donut's not going to run away. It doesn't have legs. It's not just going to run away from you and, you know, it's never going to be there again. So there's no famine there with the donuts. You don't have to feast on it, but it's teaching yourself and your body about that.
Yeah. I think, I mean, if we're privileged enough to listen to this podcast, we're privileged enough to have the option of having a donut whenever we like. Like, let's be honest. So, you know, that privilege means that we can, right? We can always have more later. And I mean, that gets into a whole nother conversation about kind of privilege and kind of being middle class and all that kind of stuff, which I know that I am, and I try and break some of those stereotypes as much as I can. But because of that, we need to recognize the privilege that we have, and we you know, being able to walk away and come back to something later is a privilege, but it's something that we forget. Like we don't. I think I posted something on my stories about dessert the other day about how, if you know, it kind of feels like a routine that if there's dessert there, we have to have it. Like, what if we're full? Why are we eating more? Like, I do this all the time. Like, I don't know if you do this, but I'd like to try and be a bit more deliberate about this kind of stuff. But when we're full, why do we keep eating? And I don't know whether this is an inbuilt thing when we're young that we need to finish our plate. I know that was something that wasn't necessarily drilled into me, but I feel like that was something that you're meant to do, especially at school and stuff.
And my grandma always did that. Finish your whole meal.
Yeah, there you go. But why, right? Why, if we're not hungry, why are we forcing ourselves to finish it? That's, we've spent our entire lives forcing ourselves to finish what's in front of us, and we're overriding those hunger cues that are inbuilt where we're told we're full, but we're just ignoring it. We're kind of going, oh, it's fine. But the dessert looks so good and I need to have it because, you know, that's great. Or oh, well, there's some more lasagna on the table, so I should have more lasagna because it's only fair that we finish it. It will go to waste otherwise, and there are starving kids in Africa. It's that classic saying. I don't know if you've ever heard that one.
Oh, I hear all the time. Don't let it go to waste.
It's just, yeah, it's really interesting to kind of, in retrospect, look back on some of that stuff and go, why did we do this? But I think there's no point looking back on it and pondering on it unless we're then willing to do something about it moving forwards. And so I was talking about this with a friend the other day. I'd really like to spend a week really, really consciously and really deliberately eating my food. It doesn't matter what food that is, by the way, just any whatever I'm having for food, but where I stop when I'm full. And it's, yeah, I think it seems really simple. To say out loud, it sounds really simple. But I think a lot of people would really benefit from doing that, where we kind of go, are we just eating this because it's on our plate? Or are we eating this because actually we're still hungry?
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a host of other problems that that make that approach hard. One being distractions, being on your cell phone, being on your computer while you're working and eating and not actually, you know, putting down the fork and drinking some water and letting your food sit and enjoying it. And number two, people just not having consistent meal times and having blood sugar regulation just spike up and down. And If your blood sugar is really low, you're gonna be starving and grabbing for food, and you're not gonna have that hunger cue hit the way it should, because your body is just ravenous to get that glucose in. So I think there's some problems, but once people, you know, fix those problems, I think that's a fantastic way to live your life.
Most definitely. I think it's really interesting if, again, I'm going to sound quite middle class here again.
That's fine.
when you are aware, or when I've last been to, let's say, a tasting menu at a restaurant, because I love my food. I think food is incredibly amazing, and I love to try new foods and new recipes. And tasting menus at restaurants is one of my favorite thing in the world to do when I have the money to do so. But I find it really interesting when you go and you get quite small portions. And you look at the minute and you think, oh, I'm going to be hungry after that. And you end up towards the end of the meal, but because it's been quite slow, it's been methodical, it's been very deliberate, you're tasting everything as you go, like, oh, that was amazing. Oh, what's in that? You end up at this meal feeling quite completely satisfied. You're like, you rarely ever leave and end up needing to go and buy something more. But you probably ate less than you would have done at home in a meal normally. And so I just find that really interesting as well, that when we're present with, you know, we don't get our phones out at a fancy restaurant very often, do we? But when we're present and eating deliberately and thinking about what we're doing and thinking about what we're eating and taking time over it, we tend to have a much better respect over our hunger and over our fullness cues that just seems to happen without us really having to try very hard.
Yeah, very well said. And that actually sparked something in me. Also, thinking is when people are overthinking food these days. They're overthinking, you know, nutrients versus less nutrients, and they're overthinking this is bad for me versus this is good for me. And I know I saw one of your posts in regards to white versus whole wheat bread, and people just oversimplifying nutrition. That is the problem, essentially. People oversimplifying this being inflammatory versus anti-inflammatory. And it's about the whole entire diet, like we've already said.
People got so angry.
Yeah.
People got so angry about that one because I was saying that you could get that both were completely valid. I was saying that both should be part of your diet. If you enjoy both white and brown bread, then include both of them in your diet. And people are going, how dare you? How dare you say that? White bread has no nutrients. I remember my dad a long time ago used to tell me that white bread was wallpaper paste. So I always had that in my head that was what it was. But it was just that people were like, yeah, but brown has more fiber. I'm like, great. So does that mean that every time you pick something at the supermarket, do you look at it and go, no, but that has less fiber than this thing, so I'm going to move to that one. Then do you just keep working up till you've bought something in the supermarket that has the most fiber and you'll never buy anything below that? Like, that's not how this works. Like, Otherwise, we would just be drinking that stupid Huel drink that I don't understand why people are. I don't know how you feel about that, but
the what we, drink?
Have you seen the drink Huel? I think it's H U E L, where it's essentially all of your daily. This might make you a little bit annoyed. It's essentially drinking your food. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it has all of the like micro and macronutrients that you need for optimal health, in quotes, and in you quotes. Never have to eat any food ever again.
Who would do that? Like,
oh, well, so people are like, this is it's selling. I just don't understand. I don't understand why you would want to drink your meals and not eat them. Eating is so much fun. Like, why are we doing that? But that's the problem, right? People are going, ah, yes, but that's fine. Food is fuel, and that it is, but it's also so much more than that. Mm-hmm. If we're only looking at it from one perspective and we're going food is only ever fuel, then we're taking the enjoyment out of it as well. And if we enjoy white bread, why are we cutting out of our diet for fear that it doesn't have enough fiber or for fear that it's been bleached or, you know, whatever the argument is? Like, why are we cutting this stuff out when we enjoy it? Why, if we enjoy eating a certain type of food, then enjoy eating that certain type of food. That's fine. It's perfectly fine. And that's what's healthy. Not healthy is not cutting it out because you found something that's more nutritious. Healthy is acknowledging that something else is more nutritious, having that in your diet as well, but not cutting out the other thing just because it doesn't, you know, on the table, on the Excel spreadsheet of what's better for you, it doesn't sit in the top 10. Like, that's just not how this stuff works.
The Excel spreadsheet.
You can tell I'm a scientist. You see?
Yes. The dose creates the poison, guys. If you have a little bit of white bread, it's not going to kill you. If you, and you know, I see people in regards to skincare freak out about PEGs and endocrine disruptors. If you have a little bit of a moisturizer that you love that makes your skin feel good, it's not going to murder you. I promise you walk outside during the day, that's going to give you more endocrine disruptors than your little moisturizer.
Yeah, there are a lot of things. I think that reminds me of the fact that I don't know what it's like in the US, but in the UK, doctors don't tend to fit the healthy mold very often. And I think that's because we learn about so many different things that can kill us. Like, there are so many.
They just give up.
Yeah, well, in one way, it's like, well, why do you see so many doctors that are smoking? And you kind of, I personally don't, but you kind of ask them, they're like, well, you know, I mean, I'm in the grand scheme of things, I'm more likely to die from something else. And you kind of go, oh, I mean, God. I understand the rationale, but it's kind of that there are. But in one way, that is an interesting way of looking at it, where you go, look, if you're so scared about the tiny, tiny things, but we're not actually taking some of this stuff rationally, it just doesn't make any sense. You're so scared about the possible correlative side effects of the small amount of chlorine in tap water, and yet you're perfectly happy to go outside and breathe in all of the air from the back of the exhaust pipe of the cars that are going around in the streets, and you don't seem to worry about that, and yet that's going to have far more of an impact on your long-term health than the tap water is. But we're vilifying one of them and we're completely ignoring the rest. So I'm not saying we need to start being scared of everything, but at the same time we need to start being rational about that, you know, what is actually important, and making some judgment calls between, is this going to be more detrimental to me than beneficial if I start using it as another reason to restrict certain foods?
Yes. And another thing to keep in mind is, if you are stressing so much about what you eat, what you're putting in your body, what you're putting on your body, what you're cleaning with, if you are stressing so much, that stress in itself can be even more detrimental on your health than if you would have just, you know, used Lysol on your counters or just eaten the freaking ice cream. That stress is can be just as detrimental.
Most definitely. It's very frustrating seeing people get so bogged down by wanting to know every minute detail about what they're putting into their bodies. And, you know, is this good for me? Is this not good for me? And just looking at it in such broad terms like that it's so hard. It's so, so hard to get out of that kind of cycle. And I don't really have the answer to that kind of stuff, because that's not my area of expertise. And I think that there are some really important, there are some times when it's really important to see someone that can help you with that kind of stuff. Because I know that there are a lot of people that struggle with needing to be in control over every aspect of their health. And it doesn't make them more healthy. It really doesn't.
No, it takes away from their life for sure.
Mm.
Oh, and just, I don't know if you see this problem. I will decide, hey, today I'm going to have this ice cream, you know, like a normal ice cream. Another day I might decide, hey, I'm going to have this Halo Top, you know, the sugar alcohol ice cream.
Mm.
And it does not matter which one I post on social media in my stories. I will get people saying, oh my God, you eat that? Oh my God, you allow that? Oh my God, you promote that? How dare you? And I'm like, how dare I? Okay. I'm just going to eat my ice cream and enjoy it. While I'm at it, I'll sip on my chemicals, my chemical soda. I'll sip on that with it, you know. But it just blows my mind. Not only, you know, judgment that happens, but vilifying, like we've said. And it just absolutely blows my mind that people think that it's okay to, you know, call people out for enjoying certain foods, for judging others, because that is just not the way life was meant to be. Let people do people. Let them do them. And then just knowing that just because you see somebody eat something, you don't know about their whole entire daily diet. You don't know how they ate. So always keep in mind when people make food decisions, that's just one decision in the moment. And when you make decisions, that's just one decision in the moment out of the whole entire week, the whole entire month, your whole entire life.
Mm. I think some of that comes from a really healthy attitude to rejecting diet culture, but at the same time it's then gone so far that it's become a culture in and of itself being anti-diet.
Oh, we could go for days about the anti-diet culture. Oh God.
But that's the whole thing about the normal in quotes ice cream compared to the Halo Top ice cream, right? It's the whole, you know, normal ice cream is bad for you. That's diet culture, right?
Uh-huh.
It's that normal ice cream is bad for you. It has loads of calories. It has loads of fat. It's unhealthy. So therefore, diet culture says you need to avoid ice cream. And then Halo Top comes along, and it's a in quotes healthier alternative. But why is it healthier? Because it has lower calories. Fine. So therefore, people say, "Ah, but you know what? That's diet. You know, that's kind of diet culture in and of itself, where people are justifying eating the whole tub of ice cream because it has low calories, and therefore, actually, this is just as problematic." But what should we actually be able to do? We should be able to eat both of these, right? We should be able to eat whatever we fancy at the time, based on our cravings, based on how we feel, based on what's available in the supermarket, based on the money we have, based on what's in the freezer, what we've run out of, what we haven't. You know, we shouldn't be making these choices based on, is this diet culture? But saying that, it is really important to get to a point where you can do that. And so for some people, buying Halo Top, because it's the in quotes healthier version, might actually be really problematic for them, because it may actually encourage them to eat the entire tub in one go, but it may do that by kind of counterintuitively telling them that they shouldn't be feeling guilty about it. But again, the only reason that they're buying it is because they feel guilty about the normal ice cream. And so we need to kind of recognize where we're at all points in this journey. I'll give you a good example as to something that might make it a bit clearer. So calorie counting, for example, has the potential to be very problematic. I completely agree with that as a statement. I think that for some people, calorie counting could be the worst decision that they make. I think it may create a whole load of rules around their life. It may be really, really detrimental to their relationship with food. And it may be really, really detrimental to their mental health. I personally found calorie counting very helpful for me when I started my journey of what I see as my journey of getting healthier and getting a better relationship with food. Because actually, to me, I took it in a way of learning about the calorie and nutrient densities of foods, and it gave me a much better outlook personally. Now, again, that's very personal, and as I said, for some people it might be detrimental. However, to the reason I'm bringing this up is because I went back into calorie counting relatively recently to try and be a bit more active is the wrong word, a bit more deliberate about my gym work. So I wanted to build a bit more strength in the gym whilst at the same time losing some fat so that I had more muscle definition. It was all an aesthetic reason. It wasn't anything particularly fancy. It was just me seeing what I could do. And it was working to an extent. And then I started becoming very busy at work. And my job started becoming very stressful for a whole host of reasons. And I realized that I was continuing to calorie count. I was continuing to prep my meals. I was continuing to make sure that I got to the gym a certain number of times a day. I was making sure that my carbs were higher on days when I was doing more vigorous exercise at the gym. Stuff that scientifically is you know, maybe makes sense. However, mentally, I was suffering, and I was suffering because I was having a hard time at work, and I was trying to do all of this other stuff at the same time that it then started becoming problematic. And this isn't someone who, for me, I found it really helpful at first. And so I realized, hang on a second, this is really, and I stopped immediately. I went, absolutely not. Like this is actually making my relationship with food worse, even though I'm at a point in my journey where I think I have quite a good relationship with food. What I was doing over the period of a couple of weeks, as I started getting more and more stressed at work, but I was still plogging on with calorie counting and making sure I hit my macros and all that kind of stuff, it was starting to become really detrimental. And so I think it's really important to recognize where you are at, because everyone is different. And for me, where I was at a month ago with work, I needed to stop. And when you have someone telling you that calorie counting is the only way you can lose weight, that's why I have such a problem with people being dogmatic about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because for some people, it's going to be so detrimental to them. It's going to be incredibly problematic. And so for me, I needed to stop, and I needed to just start being more intuitive with what I was eating. I just needed to start kind of letting some of that stuff go and going, I can come back to that. You know what? Like I can come back to the goals that I have in the gym from a separate point of view. That doesn't need to happen right now. That is not something that needs to take over my life to the extent that my mental health is going to suffer. And to be able to get to a place where you recognize that is incredibly important. And I don't think I would have recognized that 2 years ago, for example. And I'm really grateful that I'm in a place where I can recognize that. But that's what I'll often say to people, that this stuff is so personal, and we need to be very aware of what we're told needs to be a rule, and is that rule going to be helpful or not helpful for us? Is it improving our relationship with food? Is it improving our mental health? Forget the physical side for a bit. Is it improving the rest of that stuff? And if it's not, I don't care whether you get shredded, whether you get ripped, whether you build all the muscle in the world, that's not going to make you healthier overall. If your mental health has hugely suffered from that, if your relationship with food has hugely suffered from that, that's not sustainable.
Yes, exactly. Good for you. I'm so happy for you that you recognize that, because I know that's a problem. And like I tell people, you know, if your diet or your lifestyle, diet in quotes, if it does not enhance your life, then it's not for you. Mm. You have to figure out what's for you. And you know what? That can change as you move through your journey. Some people, macronutrient counting, and I'm a firm believer in macronutrient counting. I call myself a macro coach, a macro dietitian, but I know that that does not work for everybody. And there are cycles for people that you need. You need intuitive eating cycles. You need to step back away from that. And there are certain people, like you said, who can't do it. And it's all about what's going to enhance your life, what's going to help you mentally, and remembering that health isn't just how you look. For sure, it is not. Mm-hmm. And if you throw away that mental aspect, then you will never, never reach true health if you forget to take care of your own mind, body, and soul.
Mm. Definitely. It's not an easy thing to do by any stretch of the imagination, but it's something we really should be striving for. And it's not, there isn't going to be a blanket way of how to do that. and there isn't going to be something magical. But I would say it goes back to some of that stuff I said earlier about giving yourself unconditional permission to eat all foods. Mm-hmm. It goes back to making sure that you're prioritizing your relationship with food first and foremost, because that's the only, I really believe that's the only way this can be sustainable. If you are doing something but you're wrecking your relationship with food at the same time, that's not going to be sustainable, because you, once everything else is done and said and done, your relationship with food is what's left. And if that's been wrecked along the way, and again, not to scare people, it's not, you can't wreck this stuff permanently, but the further deep you go into having a bad relationship, the harder it is to get back. So it's really important not to not lose sight of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And the last note I would say is, I would question if there's a food rule, is it you creating the food rule? Is it social media creating the food rule? Mm. Where's the food rule coming from? Why is the rule there? And I would really question, is this rule stressing me out? Is it something that's even scientifically valid? Why is it there? So this was a fantastic conversation. I love it. I know we detoured a little bit here and there, but fantastic conversation. And I really think it's going to help a lot of people. So I just want to really
I think those are the best ones.
Yeah, seriously. You know, really get into the getting down and dirty into the topics. That's for sure. And I know it's controversial in regards to macros, calories, eat this, eat that. Like, everything's always controversial. But to be honest, I love controversial. Why not? Why not ruffle all the feathers?
If it starts conversations, then that's a good thing. That is a good thing. We need to be having more conversations about this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Instead of just blocking.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, hang on a second. Who does that? I'll give you a list of people.
Oh, there is a list. I could definitely make a list.
I've got a notes page on my phone of a list of people that have blocked me, and I'm saving it. I don't really know what I'm going to do with it, but I have a list, because there are people that get so upset whenever anyone questions their beliefs, and I would like to think that you can question what I'm saying day in, day out. I might get a bit upset, but I'm not going to block you for the sake of it. As long as you're staying respectful about it, as long as you're not being rude or being abusive to my followers, I'm not going to block you. But, you know, you, at the same time, we all need to be open to being challenged about this kind of stuff, because otherwise we're not going to learn, and we all have more to learn. I definitely do.
Oh, yeah. And that is how you know that, you're scientific and a professional, is you're open and willing to learn. And there's that curve of learning that I think it's the Dundrid something effect, to where you finally think you're there, but really you just feel like you know nothing.
Yeah. The more you know, the less you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking your time to talk with me. I want to make sure that any of my listeners can make sure they know where to find you. They can find all your social media posts, order your NutriBullocks, you know, where?
My t-shirt.
Yes.
Oh, we should definitely do that. Oh, well, yeah. You've got to be quick, though. Otherwise, it's never going to get there before Christmas. Now, you can find me on Instagram at unfattening. That's fattening, but unfattening, which again, I might change it at some point, but at the moment it's still being slightly controversial. And as we just said, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Keep it.
So you can find me at unfattening on Instagram. You can find me at unfattening on Facebook, although just go to Instagram first and I'll link you to everything else from there. That's going to be the easiest way of doing things.
Awesome. Okay. And if you have any website or anything like that, I will make sure everything is in the description below. So if you guys want to find him, find me, whatever it is, everything is in the description. And thank you so much again, Josh, for taking your time to speak with me. It's been such an honor and pleasure.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me as well. It's been lots of fun.
Okay, well, I hope you have a fantastic rest of your night. For me, it is the day. I got a little while to go, but... Have a great night.
I'm off for pizza this evening, so I am going to have a great one.
Oh, okay. You're going to do the turmeric pizza?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they serve that. We'll find out. I'll let you know.
Okay, it sounds good. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.